Super Apuestas Podcast.
My name is Stephen Graham, and I'm the co-host of the show. You might recognize me from the Pro Wrestling Super Show and the All Japan Excite series, also here on Pro Wrestling Only. And I am joined here by J.R. Goldberg. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm great. I'm ready to go with this new podcast adventure, which we plan to put out every other Wednesday going forward.
So sounds great.
We'll see how that goes, but you never know. The Pro Wrestling Super Show used to be weekly, and now it is only the weekend of every major WWE pay-per-view, so you don't know how it goes. But JR, you've not done a Pro Wrestling Only podcast, so why don't you tell us a little bit about where you write and what you've done?
Sure. So I'm, I guess me and you in some way go way back. I've been on the DVDVR, PWO message boards for quite some time. Mostly, I guess at this point, I'm known for writing articles for Voices of Wrestling, occasionally Wrestling with Words. They're sort of where I got my start. I tend to try and write sort of in-depth articles on specific matches rather than reviews, and try and sort of come up with like a narrative sense for them. And I guess, you know, that's sort of what led us to this podcast in some way, where we're taking a match format that we both really love, the Apuestas match, the bet match, the mask match, whatever you want to call it, and sort of taking a deep dive into specific ones sort of one week at a time.
Yeah, and you've written some really great articles on Voices of Wrestling on some famous Asplestis matches. I hope I said that right. I am Canadian with no Spanish bones in my body. But yeah, so like you said, so every week what we're going to do, or every other week is what we're going to do, is take a look at a certain match and kind of talk about the history of the mask or the hair, or, you know, these betting matches don't have to be mask or hair. They could be a career or whatever it is. Kind of take a look at what they had before, and then kind of what happened to them afterwards, if it was a good decision on who won, and that information. So we're going to dive into that. But before we do, why do you like the Asbestos matches so well?
You know, I think that there's something really, you know, one of the things that we all love about wrestling is that it's a simple and easy to digest conflict, you know, and it works best when the stakes are really high. And, you know, titles give that to a lot of matches in the US, you know, or, you know, big angles that we have, but there's something that's like inherently symbolic and really meaningful about like taking somebody's mask or taking their hair. That I think just adds a gravitas to the match that makes it work sort of without context. You know, you can watch an Apuestas match between two competitors that you don't know a ton about. And you can see immediately, generally, sort of, you know, who is the de facto face or technico? Who is the Rudo? You can see sort of why they hate each other, or if not why necessarily, you can see that they hate each other. And that sort of, you know, visceral action is what really made me fall in love with wrestling in the first place. And so it's what I enjoy about watching this style of match. It works without all the other stuff that inevitably gets layered upon it when you can watch an entire angle or something like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. And the other aspect I think that really stands out for me is the emotion is
there. Oh, sure. Yeah.
And kind of wrestling is at its best when it's emotional. And, you know, there's people crying in the crowd. There's the stakes are really, really high. Like, you can lose the title and then win it back. If you lose your hair or your mask, well, your hair will eventually come back, but it takes time. But your mask, it ain't coming back. Unless
I mean, there's a finality to it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The stakes are just higher.
Yeah.
Which is important. And also, the other reason I kind of want to do this podcast is because, as we all know, Lucha Libre is kind of like the most neglected area of wrestling.
It's the redheaded stepchild of the three major styles of wrestling, right?
Exactly. So I wanted to kind of show a spotlight on it. That kind of brings us to our first match here. And the reason we picked it, it's Rey Mysterio Jr. versus Mr. Condor from August 14th, 1992. And we picked it because Rey Mysterio Jr. is a wrestler everyone really knows. So I find one of the easiest ways to get into a style of wrestling that you don't know is to watch someone that you do know do that style. So seeing Rey Jr. here, if anyone doesn't watch much Lucha or wants to follow around with us, we'll put the link in the description. But Rey Jr. is someone you know, so this might help you out a little bit.
For sure. Yeah, and I mean, it's really interesting to watch Rey because even though, you know, obviously age and, you know, his physical limitations have changed his style, you know, it's interesting watching him in 1992, and we'll get into the details here, where, I mean, really, he's pretty, not fully formed at this point, but like, I mean, he's a force of nature. You know, I mean, he's so sympathetic already. Like, it's pretty unbelievable to watch, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's amazing how quickly he got good. So,
yeah.
Let's take a look a little bit at their mask history here, brought to you by LuchaWiki.com, a really great website. If you ever want to know a little bit more about any luchador, just type in their name and you'll get everything. So Rey Jr., he started in April of 1989. He went apparently under the name The Green Lizard. But there is a question mark if that's true. and then he went under El Calibre, the hummingbird, one of the few Spanish words I know I learned from Mike Tenay. And then in 1991, he started using his uncle's name and became Rey Mysterio Jr. And he had one tag match, hair mask match as El Calibre in 91. But this match here that we're talking about is his first one-on-one mask match and his first, match as Rey Mysterio Jr., in a betting situation. So. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it is really interesting. And it's interesting his first – I mean, it speaks to how great he was sort of early on here. I mean, 3 years into the run, that his first mask match is one that is, I mean, pretty weighty. You know, it's not like this is sort of like a mid-card thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very talented early on. People talk about, he's kind of like a Matt Riddle who kind of got
it.
Yeah,
for sure.
So his opponent, Mr. Condor, he started as Romano Garcia, and he used that from 1975 to 1992, when he became El Condor and then Mr. Condor. And he had some hair matches as Romano Garcia. As Mr. Condo, he had one mask match previous in March 92, where he defeated El Cholo and took his mask. So Mr. Condo has some experience here in these mask matches. He's already taken a mask. So his mask for Rey Jr. to win is not a meaningless mask. It was built up a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, that's, it's crazy that he'd been wrestling since 1975 already. And, I guess I didn't realize that.
He's probably like 12 and, you know.
Yeah, right. You know, that's another thing about Lucha that, it doesn't get enough credit for. The longevity of the workers is truly amazing. Guys like Atlantis, who I'm sure if we continue this podcast, we'll talk about quite a number of times.
Yeah.
guys like Casas, Black Terry, you know, I mean, these are guys that, you know, if they, you know, wrestled an American style or a Japanese style, I mean, their careers would be well shorter than they are. I mean, Atlantis is still wrestling, same with Casas, a tremendously good quality of match, you know?
Yeah.
He's like 1,000, so.
Yeah. I think there's something to taking a side bump instead of a back bump.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they roll with everything, right?
You know? There's some smart aspects to Lucha that helps your career out.
For sure.
So let's get into the match here. You wrote a little mini essay on this match, which was...
Yeah. So I'm a nerd, right? So I just wanted to not go in blind and say, 1,000 times. So I just sort of wrote like stream of consciousness thoughts that I sent to you so that I at least had some guideposts. But, you know, I talked about some of this already, but, you know, I one of the things with matches, you know, really do well is that they work without context, which is something in wrestling that I'm sort of always interested in. You know, I don't know about you, but one thing that I've given a lot of thought to over the course of my life, and I think others have too, are like matches that you can show people in your family or friends that aren't wrestling fans that could conceivably make them understand why this is an obsession for you, you know?
Yeah.
And inevitably, I think people show matches that are like weighed down by like big angles that you were really invested for the blow off, but it doesn't work as sort of this like, you know, in a vacuum entity. I think like Apuestas matches sort of do a lot of the work for you. And like even right off the bat in this, you get a really good sense of who these two people are. You know, Rey is standing there with like two beautiful women and the crowd is like super cheering for him. And like you can tell he's this like man of the people, you know? And then Condor is there like only with Blue Panther, who is, you know, like just like, and they're both just like total pricks, like right off the bat. Like,
doesn't he look like just like a slimy little jerk, like right away?
Yeah. Condor's mask also. And like, this is like one of the great things about watching like Rainy Lucha, from like the mid-90s is like, his mask, which is supposed to be a bird, I guess, right? A condor.
I guess.
Like, makes him look super demonic. Yeah. You know, like, it's got these, like, horrific fins. he just looks like a terrifying creature from, like, a medieval manuscript. You know?
Totally. Yeah. And, you know, Blue Panther, he's someone we'll talk about maybe in a future episode, too.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, when I started watching, he was essentially a babyface, but, like, going back to this older footage, man, he was a hell of a rudo.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's, you really, at this point, only see him in Maestros matches, you know, where there's just this sort of mutual respect aspect to everything he does. Yeah. But, boy, yeah, he was a dick. Just a total dick.
And he certainly gets involved a little bit later on. But let's talk about the first fall. What stood out to you in that?
So, there's a few things in the first fall that, stood out to me and that I think probably bear some discussion. And one of the things that I think we should talk about, and a boon that it's in this first map, because it's something that I think turns a lot of people off to Lucha, is the role of the referee. In this first fall and really throughout the match. You know, Lucha counts in general are very slow, and I know it takes a lot of people out of it. And the referee in this, is Tarantes, right?
Yeah.
There's not even a semblance of impartiality. Like, I mean, he is directly on the side of Mr. Condor.
I have heard an interesting theory thrown out by one of the luchadors when he was trying to explain the referees. He was saying that the referees count slow because they're being very careful that they get the count right. So if you're slapping your hand down really fast, you might miss the person getting their shoulder up. So if you do it slower, you're going to be more accurate. So
yeah, I mean, and I think I like that theory as sort of like a kayfabe thing. I also think that it ties into one of the aspects of Lucha that's different in that there's not necessarily finishing maneuvers. There's just moves that are good that like often result in a pinfall, you know?
Yeah.
and like the fact that everybody knows that these moves, like, you know, I think that ties into the referee sort of and being careful and checking and understanding when those moves, you know, can result in a pinfall. But here, I mean, even just right off the bat, I mean, he's clearly allowing Blue Panther to interfere. Yeah. Like, I think in the first fall, if I'm remembering right, I mean, like, you know, Ray sort of turns the tides and then Tarantes holds his arm back. So
he was throwing an illegal punch. Come on.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, okay. That's right. Perfect. One of the things that I wrote about this is, you know, when you're watching Lucha and Apuestas matches in general, you're not watching a sport, I guess. No, and you're not watching a competition. I mean, granted, there's a winner or a loser, but you're much more so watching a narrative. You know, you're almost watching a fable, and the referee is there to add to that in any way that will push the narrative forward. So in this way, you know, like Ray needs to have the odds stacked against him, right? Like there needs to be something insurmountable so that he can garner even more sympathy. And I think that's sort of what is, you know, what the point of the ref in this match is, rather than just to be someone who's, you know, counting pinfalls or what have you, you know?
Yeah. The way I kind of look at it sometimes is that, so like American wrestling and like Japanese wrestling is kind of trying to simulate a sport while Mexican wrestling is trying to simulate a play.
Yes. Yeah, that's a great way to look at it. Yeah.
So yeah, that was a fine first fall. It's kind of the more traditional first fall where you have the Rudo sneak attack, you know, while Ray's still in his jacket. Keep the advantage most of the match, most of the first fall, and then picking up the win. That's a way a lot of these go, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that this is standard is the word that I would use for it. You know, I mean, you there are a lot of first falls in Lucha matches, even just sort of not Apuestas matches where, and Trios matches where, you know, there will be sort of a sneak attack. You know, and then within 3 to 5 minutes, there will be a fall and the, you know, a celebration from the Rudos. Yeah, I mean, I, you know, the only other thing that I think, you know, you can talk about in the first fall is like, even when Ray takes over briefly with the Tilt-A-Whirl backbreaker, you know, it sort of, you know, people a lot of times in discussions will talk about transitions, how important transitions are to Lucha as a style. And I think that this sort of sets the groundwork for that, where, you know, you can really throughout this entire match, anytime someone goes on offense, you remember why and how they went on offense. There's not, at least not until the very beginning of the third fall, which again is pretty standard in some ways. There's not a time where you're like, wait, how did we get here? You know, which I think is something that I find tremendously interesting about in general and
yeah, it's almost like in Lucha, you kind of know who is winning. Japanese wrestling and in American wrestling a lot, too. You kind of don't know who's winning the match. Like, if you were to judge it on points, like, I could judge Lucha on points, I think. But I don't think I could judge Okada Omega on points. Like, who's winning?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, I agree 100%. That's a very good way to look at it that I never thought of before, but it works. Yeah.
Me neither. That just came to me. So, so we go to the second fall, and something that I always find fascinating and let you talk on this here is that we know Ray is going to win this second fall. Like, there's going to be a third fall. It's a mask match. It's not going two straight falls.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that the second fall is worthless, right?
Yeah, no, I think that, they do a lot of really smart stuff. You know, you know where it's going, right? Like, but it's interesting. There's a lot of studies, if you'll forgive a non sequitur, there's a lot of studies about popular culture and stuff that talk about how spoilers, actually enhance our enjoyment of a well-crafted narrative, right? That when you know, something is going to happen at the end of an episode, you are more on the edge of your seat. You know, the tension is escalated for you. Because you know the destination, but you don't know the journey. And it keeps you sort of more with the journey, as opposed to just sort of like a shock value thing. And I think that that's part of the inherent beauty of the three act structure or the three fall match. You know that Rey is coming back. You know, that's a given. You know, everyone in the building except for like the, you know, 5-year-old children know that Rey is going to win this second fall. They just don't know how. And there's an interest in keeping you invested and keeping his sympathy up, while you figure out sort of how he's going to overcome all this arm work, you know, overcome the referee, overcome the rampant interference by Blue Panther. You know, what is going on here? How is he going to do it? You know?
Yeah. Sure. And, one thing that, stands out about this fall to me is that if you're someone who, knows Rey Jr. starting from his WCW run, like, this second fall was more aligned with that Rey. Like, you get, this ridiculous, missile dropkick tope thing.
Oh, God. That, I mean, it's, first of all, can we talk, do you know why there isn't a second rope?
I have no idea. They probably couldn't afford it. Or, like, right, broke, like, earlier in the night, or who knows. Yeah.
So, like, I assume that it's pure coincidence that there isn't a second rope here, but, like, it's pretty unreal how it does add to, like, the narrative of the whole thing, where, like, none of Rey Jr.'s offense works, right? Like, yeah. Like, he can't climb to the top, like, he can't bounce off the ropes fast, like, you know, it's wonderful to think that it could be, like, a genius stipulation that this one came up with. And I have zero faith in this case, but I'm gonna tell myself this. But this, like, tope missile dropkick that he does is insane. And, like, if you're on the fence, while you listen to this, like, I would encourage you to at least turn it on for the end of the second fall so you can see Rey do this. And I wrote this to you when we were talking about it, but, like, I love that Rey goes for this. And I think to myself, it's like, oh man, like a missile dropkick tope, like, that's awesome. Like, more people should do that spot. And then he lands from it. And I'm like, oh,
no,
they now don't. I totally understand why no one does this. Like, you know, there's just no way that Condor can protect him at all. I mean, it hurts to watch him land.
There's a reason this did not become, like, he switched to the Frankensteiner, basically.
Yeah, right. 100%. Like, yeah. You can see him, like, lying on the ground, just being like, oh, this was a poor decision. Like, I have made a huge mistake. But it's wonderful how it really works in terms of the finish of the second fall, which, you know, Rey wins by countout. That, like, both, you know, the impact of it knocked out Mr. Condor, and Rey was unable to get up until, you know, the count of 19, where he sort of slowly crawls into the ring. And I mean, it's a ingenious finish to the second fall, because it keeps Condor so strong. I mean, it puts off the momentum turning, you know,
yeah.
Things still aren't even going into the third fall, which I think is really, really important. Overall.
Yeah, and a countout finish is not a common lucha finish. Like,
no, yeah.
I don't remember seeing too many of those in my life. But so yeah, it was a really well, I love a good count out finish, and this one was very effective.
For sure. Yeah.
So we go to the third fall. Ray has, you know, even the contest, but he's still not really in control. And this is when, the narrative looks pretty dark, for Ray Jr. with, Blue Panther and Chirachas making this basically a 3-on-1 match, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, very clearly. Although I do think that they do a really good job of, at the beginning of this fall, you know, Tarantes, Blue Panther, and Mr. Condor, because of the sort of the weirdness of the countout finish, and going down a fall in such a unique fashion, start to argue. And even though momentum is still on their side, cracks are starting to show, you know? It's an interesting match to watch right after the Super Bowl from last weekend where, you know, Atlanta was still winning the game, you know, but you could tell that even though they were winning, like that they were not quite as comfortable as they maybe should be when you look at all of the things that had led up to that specific point.
Or like any, Leafs game this year when they're up in the third. And you're just waiting for them to collapse. And it's really sad every time. But yeah, I don't know how many hockey references I can get in here on a Lucha show, but I'll do them. So, anything else? What else do you got on this third fall? I thought it was a pretty dramatic third fall here, which they usually are.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's really well structured. You know, I mean, I think that the third fall in general in Apuesta's matches, especially, and Lucha in general in some aspects, has another sort of specific structure where, you know, the bombs are different than they are in Puro or what have you, but they do start to quote unquote throw bombs. You know, there's more pins, there's more submission attempts because, you know, I mean, really it's, for all the marbles, you know, everyone becomes sort of a volume shooter, as it were. I really think that it's a nice touch. It goes back to the idea of sort of like feeling the momentum starting to slip away from Condor. I think that it's interesting. He goes to the top first, you know, which no one had been to the top, you know, probably because there's no middle rope, but he goes to the top, you know, and it does not pay off, you know. I mean, he takes a major risk and like Ray, even though Ray goes to the top and his tope fails right after that as well. You know, it shows again that the amount of effort and the risk that are necessary to win this match in Condor's eyes make it a style of match that now favors Ray Jr.
That's a really good point. Sorry.
The other thing that I was going to say is that I love how the second fall plays into the finale here. You know, they had that big count out finish and then Ray, again, this time it's a more sensible tope where he goes over the top.
Killer height on it too.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's beautiful. Like, I mean, and you know, everybody's down on the ground and Panther, who has done a tremendous job as a second match, we should say, is just unreal here, like not wanting the same fate to repeat itself and like, holding Ray out of the ring, you know, trying to force Condor in, you know, I mean, it really becomes, like a tremendously tense and heightened, way to sort of fill this space, which is normally just like a really dead 20 count as people lie around, you know?
Oh yeah. And then we get in the ring and, Ray hits, you know, his Hurricanrana he's so known for. And the greatness of the Hurricanrana that Ray does is that he's using so much force to hold the guy down that he just can't kick out.
Yeah. And I mean, if you watch Tarantes' count here, you know, I mean, it's like an 8 count. Like, I mean, he counts 3 times, but it takes like 11 seconds.
He wants to, you know, he doesn't want Condor to lose his mask, so.
No, he does not,
It was like those old Nick Patrick when the NWO was down and there's nothing you could do.
Yeah.
Type of thing.
Like, I sort of love it. Like, I think it totally pays off because, like, you can see, like, the wheels turning in Tarante's mind, like, oh shit, like, Condor paid me to not lose this match. But if I don't count this pinfall, I will lose my job, right? Like, yeah. So I'm screwed either way. But, like, I may as well just take a beating from Condor than, like, be destitute.
Smart decision, I think, by Toronto. And he sticks around, and then his son gets a referee job, so it all paid out for him. But how did it so overall thoughts on the match? I think it's pretty good. I don't know where I'd go with a star rating.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm pretty outspoken about star ratings not being my thing necessarily.
That's fine.
I guess I would say that, like, I would encourage people to watch this match. You know, I think that it's a really good match. I think it's got great selling. I think that it's got a lot of unique aspects to it that you wouldn't see in, not only Lucha, but wrestling in general. I think that whoever decided on the finishing stretches on the ladder two falls, they're really genius and unique. And they sort of keep the action moving and they escalate the tension. So, I mean, I would encourage people to watch it simply because it's not something that you see every day. And I think
I've never seen or heard of this match before.
Yeah. So, like, it's well worth a watch, in my opinion. You know, if you want some hipster cred to watch a match that not a lot of people know a ton about, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty good. Going forward, we all know what Ray Jr. did, right? He became a super mega star, one of the biggest draws in SmackDown history. For WCW, he was a star. So, you know, that's what he did. But what about Mr. Condor? Like, one thing that WCW taught us, like, when I first learned about Lucha was from, like, Mike Tenay, that if someone loses their mask, their, like, career's over, which...
Yeah.
So let's see. Did Mr. Condor's career end? Not really. Like, he stuck around till 2014. So, like, he had a match, kind of changed his name. But, this Ray Jr. match was probably the biggest match of his career.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the impression that I get. Not knowing a huge ton about Mr. Condor, which, I mean, probably speaks to this being the correct decision in terms of booking, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But, I mean, and, you know, like, when you watch this, even though I think he's very good in this, like, I mean, it's easy to see, like, I would say that when you watch this match, you know, Panther is way more interesting as a foil than Mr. Condor is, you know? Yeah. Like, you know, Panther's, what he adds to the match is, you know, almost overtakes one of the participants, which is, I mean, incredible when you think about how much talent that must take, but it also speaks to Mr. Condor probably being, a middling performer that, you know, is capable of punching above his weight.
Yeah, that sounds about right. So definitely, the right decision here.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll find a match in the future where we can debate if the right person won or not. But we'll see. We'll continue this on. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another
episode. Sounds great. Yeah.
We'll pick another match. And I just want to clarify to the people out there who might be worried about a show that's just going to talk about Lucha. Like, we'll branch out. There's hair matches in the WWF. There's hair matches in Memphis. There's mask matches in Japan.
Oh yeah.
So we'll.
I mean, we could even do like, I mean, like you said at the start, you know, I would love to do a loser leaves town match. You know, like we could do the Jim Duggan, Ted DiBiase tuxedo match if you wanted.
Yeah, that fits the criteria. Like, a very famous Asbestos match that no one ever talks about as being one is, Ultimo Warrior Randy Savage at WrestleMania 7.
Yeah, right? I mean, sure.
It is. Like, yeah,
so I think that's a great shout that will, you know, I mean, it will probably be Lucha centric, but probably not only Lucha. Yeah. I would also encourage people. I mean, both Steven and I are pretty active on Twitter. I'm at Wrestling Bubble. If you guys, seen my stuff before. If you have suggestions for matches that you'd like us to talk about and cover, feel free to shoot them our way. I'd love to get some fan interaction.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm Stephen Graham, TWS, on Twitter. So you can hit us up there. Also on Pro Wrestling Only, in the publications and whatever section, there'll be a thread for this show. And if there's any match you want us to take a look at for a future show, just plop it in there. My friend Elliot, who was just recently on the Pro Wrestling Super Show, has already suggested like 6 matches in private for us to watch. So...
all of them have Satanico in them. Right?
Most of them have Satanico. Yeah. But it's all good. Did you have any other plugs to get out of the way?
No. No, I think I'm good. I'm all plugged out, but, hopefully along the way we'll find some new stuff.
Awesome. Well, thanks everyone for joining us on our very first episode, and, we'll be back again in 2 weeks. Thank you.
Thank you.